Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and today we have a very special treat for you. We are talking to Bethany, and she is going to discuss with you, this is going to be a very special interview because she's not coming at it from a research perspective, from some objective outside hands-off position. This is going to be a very personal interview that's going to be revealing about sexuality on a very personal level. Bethany's going to discuss her years working as a dancer, and how is it has impacted her life, her views of women and sexuality, and welcome to Sex with Simmery.
Oi. How you doing, Tims?
Fantastic. Thank you. All right. So the first thing, just to ask you a little bit about yourself, just describe, tell people who you are, what you're about.
Okie doke. My name is Bethany. I am 25 years old, Aquarius. Originally from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and living now in Philadelphia, hanging out, having a good time. In between my time of living in Michigan and now living in Philly, I have moved all around. Just kind of been rogue, sort of a gypsy, nomad, definitely at heart. And it just kind of been getting into as many things as I can get my fingers into.
That sounds so kind of exciting. All right, so I'm just going to launch right into some exciting stuff.
Awesome.
So tell us a little bit about how you first got into dancing. And by dancing, we should clarify, like, that's the term I just used, but...
Exotic.
Exotic style dancing. So stripping, etc. Or however you want to call it.
So, okie doke.
Tell us just a little bit about it.
Well, by nature, I had no problem with nudity. Which was very interesting considering the fact I grew up extremely strict Christian, almost to the point where it makes Christians look bad. Like the definition of this isn't even Christian anymore. You know, it's so strict and so religious.
What kind of things did that mean? What did your family say about Christianity?
It meant we never talked about sexuality at all whatsoever. If I was in trouble, I would be writing all of Proverbs and then going over it with my parents. I was in Bible studies, taught Bible studies, led, like was top 10 quizzer, Bible quizzer, which is funny. But we did think, like, we all sat as a family in church. When I was grounded, it would be for like months at a time. And, you know, there was no swearing. Just a lot of really unique, you know, disciplinary things that were very religious and holier than thou.
It seems like the religion itself was not about the belief. It was not so much about Jesus as it was about...
control.
Okay.
Yep. It was very much like just a control thing. This is what the Bible teaches us. This is what we do. And so I think... by birth, I've always been an extrovert, but this definitely sort of pushed me into a level of expression. So, like, nudity was never an issue. It was sort of something that just came natural. I spent a lot of time, because I was grounded, in my room by myself. So, you know, you turn on some Shakira or something really low because we weren't allowed to listen to any secular music. You know, so, like, Newsboys or something. But... just dancing in front of the mirror by myself, you know, whether naked or clothed. And then as I started sort of, you know, running away from the house and kind of getting away from that environment, I was showing up at parties where, you know, whether I chose to drink or not, because I didn't drink till much later, I was getting naked. I was taking off my clothes because it was comfortable. And then I recognized the type of attention that came with it as well. So the first time I was introduced to exotic dancing was from a girlfriend. I was already outside of the home, moved out at 17, and had a girlfriend, which went over awesome.
And by girlfriend, you're clarifying, I mean, somebody you were dating.
Yeah, okay. A partner. And she was dancing at the time, and I was in high school and was trying to do the pay, you know, pay bills, go to school, you know, work at a fast food restaurant, and life was getting hectic and overwhelming. I was sort of shunned from all of family, so I was kind of an orphan. And I remember the first time they took me to the strip club, and I was 17, and I was actually extremely nervous. I was embarrassed. She was working there, and she was like, they're going to come around, and they're going to ask you for lap dances. Just say no. And I couldn't even look my head up. I was like, boobies. there's boobies. I'm like, no. You know, dancers come by. I'd be like, no, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. And as I started going more often, I got used to it and was like, oh, they're sort of kind of like me and it's okay. But that still guilt of Christian and, you know, this place is wrong. Of course, the strip club in itself, I have to explain it to you, is 40 years old. And it started out as Go-Go Girls, and it's in the middle of a community. So all these houses are up around it. And then you have this strip club that's like brown, gross, you know, old Hawaiian wallpaper. It's a hole in the wall. I refer to it as the dungeon.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, or in general, I'd be like, oh, you know, I'm working at the office today. But no, so the first time they took me to a bachelor party, I was seeing how the women were treated and how they were taking off their clothes, and then they asked me, would you like to take your clothes off? And I was, sure, this is great, and I got a bunch of money for it, and I was like, what? I can get paid for something I do naturally and for something that I'm already doing at parties just because it's who I am and it's sort of the gig I have. So I was like, awesome. And that's how I started. Once I turned 18, then I started working in the club.
So it sounds like it was... There's a lot of stories of, like, if somebody starts working at a strip club, like, as a teenager, that's usually some sort of, like, thing where they feel like they have to because they have to make money. But it sounds like you really did find a job that you really enjoyed.
I wanted to do it, and I was thrilled. I loved going to work. Even though I was, like, struggling on my own, my partner at the time, you know, was like, hey, I have the bills. You know, here's this and here's that. And so I wasn't needing money. No, it was something that I loved doing, and I worked with some awesome girls. It was like a family. We became a family. You know, you hear nightmare stories of working in a club where the women are nasty to you, and they do exist. I worked the day shift, so it became a regular job. You go, you show up, you work the task, and this was sort of a party environment. And so, you know, being a teenager and kind of out of the house and looking for as much trouble as I can get into, it was perfect. My belief at the time as well was that if Bill Gates could make money off of his brain and, you know, Lance Armstrong could make money off of his body, I was sort of doing the same thing. I was making money off of my skill. I was never recognized at all in high school as an attractive woman. It was more or less like the funny girl, you know, the sort of the, I didn't really fit anywhere. Now I was sort of shoved into, you're gorgeous. And here's money for that. And you know how to dance. I guess all those grounded, you know, months and weeks I was spending in my room by myself. Like it was natural. It was normal. And it was an expression. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So at this point, you're separated from your family. You're no longer living with them?
Nope.
Oh, you're still living with them?
No. Yes. I'm not living with them. I'm separated.
Okay. Did they know what you were doing for a living?
Yes. Yes, they did. In fact, I was on every prayer list imaginable. And there was a girl who came into the club who was working the night shift. And the night shift is completely different than the day shift. We don't really mix. It's a different group of women. Her name, ironically, which I find hysterical, was Genesis, which is, you know, the book in the Bible. And she was going to the same church as my parents. And so they had came out and they put, you know, on the wind screens of all the cars, like little cards about like turning to the Lord Jesus Christ and everything.
The windshields of the cars at the club?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And I remember this girl, she approached me and she's like, I don't know who you are, but your mom gave me a picture of you, and she said that there's a reason why I'm here, and that's because I need to help you out of here, which was ironic because this girl did a lot of drugs, and at the time I was pretty sober and pretty standard and just kind of hanging out, doing my thing, enjoying it, and she ended up going her way. But yeah, my parents were not supportive. I was sort of estranged from my grandmother for quite some time. But once I had told her after like maybe 2 years of doing it, we came into contact and she was like, well, as long as you got a smart head in your shoulders, do it while you do it, but don't let it suck you in. Don't stay there. And she also said, and do you know if there's a position for a woman who's 60 years old? We kind of did a little dance in the kitchen. And I was like, Grandma, this is why I love you. So, yeah, everyone in my family, they knew it. My brother got a lot of flack. He's a year younger than me. And, of course, you know, if his friends ever came into the club or something, it was pretty awkward. And he was a little disgusted at the nature of it. But it was just, it was something I stuck up for.
Was he disgusted at his friends who would go there?
No.
Well, that's interesting.
Very interesting.
It's a very surprising little...
I think it was more a reflection because I was young and so he was very young as well, of himself and the way that it's disgusting that men treat women. And so instead of, like you said, he wasn't disgusting his friends, it became my responsibility that I was allowing people to treat me in a certain way.
So it was the female responsibility to not be arousing rather than the men's responsibility to not go to a place.
It wasn't men degrading me. It was me degrading myself.
Interesting. Mm. So what's the day shift like as opposed to the night shift? I think the popular media representation of strip clubs is usually like nighttime, bachelor parties, Saturday night, etc. What the hell is the day shift like?
The day shift starts in the afternoon. You get more of like a business crowd, a lunch crowd. It's usually quite, as far as this particular club goes, it was more mellow. It's quite quiet. You get more into the art of dancing, into more of like the beauty of a woman's body and as a goddess. And my particular style of dancing sort of catered to that thinking. The woman is something to be worshipped. It's not as ghetto booty popping sort of nightclubby as like what you're saying the media puts it into. It is interesting, though, is it's still a club, so it's still dark. I worked in darkness during the day, and then I went into darkness at night. So I very rarely saw a lot of the sunshine. And a part of the atmosphere is gentlemen sort of buying you drinks. So there are several days that by 3 o'clock, I'm completely wasted, which did, you know, get me into trouble at some points. But it was a part of the nature of the job. You get guys who come in that want to talk with you. So a lot of my clients that were coming in to see, you know, whether myself specifically or my friends, wanted to have conversation. They wanted to sit there and buy a pretty girl a drink without all the distractions and talk about real life. They knew sort of how I grew up. And so I was very honest. And I would find men who wanted to talk about the difference between Christianity and sexuality and my views on it. And they wanted to talk about their wives and how they could make them feel more special. And they wanted to talk about, you know, anal sex with their wife, didn't want to hear anything about it. And so it became sort of like a counseling session and just somebody to talk to.
They were paying you in drinks or they also paid you in addition to buying you drinks?
They would also pay in addition. They would get up to leave and they'd slide me, you know, a note. And say, have a great day.
So basically, you were being paid to sort of counsel and just to listen, which is an interesting thing. I was discussing, I think in a previous podcast about the naked therapist. She does a webcast where people are paying her. Basically, she just sits there naked on a webcam.
Nice.
And they just talk about whatever. And she's not like a licensed therapist or anything, but she has found that if she is naked, there's a lot of men who feel just significantly more comfortable discussing their vulnerabilities when she's...
Because she's already exposed.
Yes. Yeah. So that's interesting. Did people want that more frequently than they wanted lap dances, or was it...
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And that's what I think the greatest difference is between day shift and night shift, again, at this particular club. Yeah, I'd get a lot of guys who would just come in, like, not a lot, again, I say, like, consistently. Oh, you know, how you doing? How's your wife? And how's things like this? Yeah, you know. So, totally.
And did you get the same people over and over again? A lot of new faces?
During the day shift, I generally, the regulars. Regular. Sometimes you'd get like a businessman, but I worked in a small town, so it's not like, you know, there's a great influx of travelers. But occasionally we would get, you know, people who were from out of town. But again, the nature of this particular club was in a community. So it wasn't high, you know, neon lights and stuff like that. Mostly regulars.
And were they anybody that you, because it's a small town, that you knew from outside of the club?
I had a couple interesting run-ins. One of them, my teacher from my high school didn't come in, but all his buddies did. And they were like, yeah, it's my bachelor party. And, you know, my teacher or my friend couldn't come in because he said he was your teacher. And they, like, made me call him. And I was like, hey, I'm sorry you couldn't come to your friend's bachelor party. Awkwardly, my sister and I have different dads. And he walked in one time. And both of us kind of sat, like, we stood there because I was walking in the door. It was, you know, and directly across from me. And he looked at me and I looked at him and I crossed my boobs and walked away. And he sat down. I came out in a robe and he's like, wow, I'm really sorry I have to run into you like this. This is extremely embarrassing. And I'm just working down the street and it's hot. I thought I'd come in for a beer. He's like, I'm not that kind of a guy, like, tried to go into this like, don't judge me. And I'm like, that's funny, don't judge me, you know, this is my job, this is whatever. And we sat and we had a nice conversation, and it wasn't really near as awkward after we sort of sat and talked about it. Nice to see you, good to see you too. Wow. So it would be really weird for a lot of people, but I think there was just a level of understanding of like, don't judge me. And we bonded on that.
Did you have any particular clients that you just especially liked?
Yes. I had a lot of clients that I especially liked. They'd come in and they'd like take trips to Mexico or something, and they'd come back with some crazy story about, you know, how they got in without their passport, but they couldn't get out of Mexico without their passport, and so they had to sneak in. And these are older people. I mean, he was like mid-40s, and he's telling me this crazy story that he couldn't ever share with his wife or with his family. But he could share. What?
Why couldn't he tell his family?
He was more conservative in his real life. So he just didn't feel like it was necessary to scare his wife about the fact that he had to jump into a van and get, you know, shuttled over by, you know, Mexicans. And it was really funny and highly illegal. And so he just couldn't, like, his professional life wouldn't allow him to share a bunch of things. And he, you know, got this shot glass and he's like, the only person I could think of was you and your friend. And so he got his shot glasses. And so there's a lot of people that I looked at as family, you know, being sort of, you know, orphaned. That was quotations.
She's making quotation marks with her hands.
From, you know, my family, they became people that I really looked forward to talking to. And we would share heart to hearts. And they would say, hey, I know, you know, you need this. Here's this. And can I take you out for dinner? Or I brought you lunch. And they were thoughtful. And it was sort of this relationship that we kind of had. On the flip side, there's definitely people that I did not look forward to coming into the club.
Okay.
You know, just because of their expectations or their style. Like when I'm giving a lap dance, you know, they're constantly touching me. And I constantly have to tell them, no, stop touching me. Or, you know, they're wearing gym shorts. And I'm like, why are you that guy? And that you want to come in and get 8 songs, which is in a row, which is great as a dancer. But just wrong in so many ways.
Describe for someone who may not be understanding why wearing gym shorts to a strip club would be weird.
Basically, like, you're just grinding on sheer bone. There's little left. And when I am only in a small little thong, there's just too many sensations that are going on. And it is very likely, and I've had it happen before, where guys have orgasmed and have actually gotten cum on my G-string, which is just way too close. It's way too personal. It's a very good example of a bad day at the office. And, you know, or guys who are so intense that they're trying to, like, hook into your soul. So they want you to look them in the eyes, and you kind of, you learn the look, you learn the facade, you learn how they want to perceive you, and you sort of become that. And some days it's easier than others to sort of build that character.
So somebody who comes in with that sort of intention, like the gym shorts, the guys that come, whether they intended to or not, like, they were, like, I'm perceiving that as they were looking for a sex worker and went to you for that work. Do you feel like that's...
They were looking for a release. I don't know. I don't know exactly, sex worker. Only because I don't know if I relate to that terminology.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily mean that that's the way you intended your job to be. What I'm mostly referring to is there are not very clear lines of delineation between all the different ways in which people through their work serve others, and there's like some element of sensuality to it. One thing that's come up repeatedly as I've talked with people who were burlesque stars or people who did whatever, there's all these, I spoke to Jessie Nicole, who is the LA chapter head of the Sex Workers Outreach Project. And we were just discussing how everybody in their various different jobs picks the line that is what is over, what is not okay for them. And like for sex workers, they wouldn't want to necessarily be known publicly. And for somebody who's a burlesque star might necessarily want to differentiate themselves from stripping. And then a stripper might differentiate herself from a sex worker. And somebody who is like a counselor might want to differentiate themselves from all of this, but you're still giving of yourself in some way. Mm-hmm. And people are coming to you for whatever it is that they're coming to you for. And if they misconstrue what line you do not want to cross, that's when there's some sort of problem. But everybody gets to view everybody else on this spectrum, and there may be judgment, even though I think, like, from my perspective, I'm looking at it from afar and seeing it as all being like ethically equal, but just what lines you pick. So I think that the situation you just described is sort of like when those signals get crossed. They came in for one thing and you expected your part of the participation to be another.
Yes. I think for me, what it brings up is it wasn't, only because I had crossed the line before. The first thing, I'll never forget it, I told my mom, yeah, I'm a stripper, because I'm very open. I always felt like if it was something, I would quit the day that I wasn't comfortable with it anymore. And I wasn't, if you're ashamed to express yourself and what you're doing, then you shouldn't be doing it. And I've always lived with that. And that comes from my grandma. If you have something on your mind, you say it. And so it was never an issue for me to be like, yes, I'm a stripper. So I told my mom, yeah, working, you know, exotic dance. It's not something she, you know, had found out about, I told her. And she said, well, isn't that just like prostituting? And I was like, no, it's nothing like prostituting. And I was so disgusted that that's how she would see it. When, you know, truth be told, it's already a line that I had already crossed. Even though I hadn't started working at the club, on my 18th birthday, I was in a hot tub naked with a man and my partner. And for some reason, the brain wants to say, like, yeah, it's not prostitution because it's not on the street corner and I'm not getting out of a car. So the difference for me is, like, giving a lap dance where, yeah, this guy is, you know, ejaculating and it's really close. It's violating, definitely. But it wasn't to me, you know, I had already done a form of selling sex. So it was in a different form for me as far as sex worker. Like, I now, so like sex worker, I don't know.
You seem like, I'm not sure. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but you seem a little conflicted about how you feel about sex work. Like, you don't like the title, but the
it weirds me out, I guess, because it's not something that I've run from. It's just, you know, that recognition of, like, yeah, this is what I did, and this is what it got me into. I don't know. There's just something about sex worker, like those two words that I'm just not connecting with for some reason.
So it's like the terminology rather than the actuality of getting compensation.
Yes.
For
it's sheer just terminology for some reason. Because I'm fine with getting paid for, you know, like at that time, like, yeah, totally, you know, was doing acts of sexuality and was getting paid for, paying my bills with that money. And, you know, I was dancing in an exotic manner and was getting paid for it. So, I don't know.
I'm just guessing here, and you can tell me if this is true or not. Yeah. It sounds like you didn't want your main job to be related to selling sex, but that if it came up under certain circumstances, if you found the particular arrangement to be acceptable to you, then that would be something you did. But it wasn't like you were actively seeking work as a prostitute. That sometimes right. It would come up and you could say yes or no.
Right.
But that wasn't really your job. That wasn't really what you were looking for.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
It wasn't something that was over like a long period of time. It was more just something that I dabbled in. And it, you know, it got way ahead, way outside of my control. And that's exactly it. I didn't really see myself as even a stripper. It was like, that was my job, but that wasn't my terminology really either. Because when I was showing up for work, it was more like, this is the beauty of a woman. This is the beauty of her body. And I'm selling not necessarily sexuality as much as sensuality. And again, like that's probably different from what a lot of people's idea is of, you know, strip clubs and how I'm looking at you or like licking my lips with my tongue. Like that wasn't what I was presenting. So, you know, all my friends, it was something that I couldn't get away from. I was introduced as, oh, this is Bethany. She's the stripper, which really bothered me because if I was a student or if I was a nurse or if I was a doctor or if I was worked at Arby's, no one would come in and be like, oh yeah, this is Bethany, she works at Arby's, because it wouldn't make anything. But my definition whenever I was introduced to somebody was, oh, this is, she's a stripper. Like it was connected to me, like that's who I was. It was my job, but yet it sort of like was my nature. But then with my nature came that expectation. But then if you go back to how I started dancing, it was because it was already who I was. I already loved getting just naked and just being free and dancing around. It was natural.
I think you're identifying in a very clear way for me, like the difference between having just an innate sexuality and going with it, as opposed to all of this stuff, all the things that get tacked on to sexuality from the outside. Like the expectation is that we all should think sexuality is bad and dirty, and therefore to work in sexuality in any capacity is to be fighting those things directly. When what you're saying is you weren't going up there trying to be the bad girl, trying to be like, I'm naughty, this is my shtick. You came at it from just an entirely different worldview, and people were reacting still from their worldview and refusing to see it from any other.
I was presenting art. That was my art form. That was my expression. That's exactly what it was, is people were allowed to sort of interpret what I was offering in any sort of manner that they wanted to. Also, another big aspect of the strip club is, you know, the politics of it. Becoming what a customer, you know, the hustle, what a customer wants you to be. So I could present what I wanted to, but then if it was on a certain day where I'm like, all right, I got X amount of bills and I've had a really great time, but now it's, I have to, you know, work it out. It sort of catered to this chameleon personality. Again, you know, the Aquarius nature of, I can be, you know, blue on one day and green on the next and, you know, orange. I could be very Southern one day not even one day, in one moment, you know, in that sort of 10 second, shake your boobs in front, turn around and shake your tail in back and be, hold out your string, say thank you. I could be anything I wanted to. I could listen to any sort of music that you listen to, or I could disagree with you in a way that you would find challenging and intriguing. I could be mysterious, or I could chat your ears off. And it was sort of that self-awareness of what I had about myself, and then being able to read people and pinpoint what it is that they were looking for. Because guys, when they walk into something as intimate as a strip club, all have that look on their face, and you can tell what it is they're looking for.
So you had in your own head, like, what you were there for. Mm-hmm. And it was dualistic. It was both that it was this artistic representation, mm-hmm. Something that you would have done for free anyway under certain circumstances. But also it was a way to make a whole lot of money really fast. And so you got two things out of it, and two that don't necessarily have to clash with each other. But people come in with their own expectations of whatever it is that they are going to project onto you, mm-hmm. both in terms of what they're going to assess about you for being there and having that job. And you can choose to, like, take it or leave it, but you were keenly aware of what they wanted, what each person came in there, what suitcase they brought in full of beliefs.
Totally.
And what sort of beliefs did people come in with? Like, what were expectations people had? What were the things they projected onto you?
Well, you could tell when somebody just wanted to talk, complain. There are a few, and their faces come in my head of the people who come in, and they sit in the same certain spot, and they just want to complain about everything, and they're, you know, wah, wah, my life is terrible, and you're going to have to listen to me. Then there was a person who was just coming in for his coffee, and his wife used to come in there with him. Oh, it's just an awesome place where it's a unique setting, and he wouldn't go and get his coffee at a coffee house because it's a too slow pace, but he loved the music, and, you know, he'd smoke his Jarm cigarette, and he just wanted to know how you were doing. And he just wanted to, you know, he wasn't high baller tipper, but he was going to give you a couple each side and say, wow, your dress is beautiful, or, you know, you're looking like you're getting stronger, or, you know, certain things. He just wanted to be a positive influence. And then you had guys who came in looking for language, ironically enough. We lived in a place where there was a high Spanish-speaking population, and my best friend spoke Spanish fluently. So they would come in just to be understood, and understood by a beautiful, tall, Amazon glorious goddess was like, mind-blowing. You also had guys who came in that just wanted, it wasn't about you, it was about them. And they wanted girls all around them, and they're going to live their high school fantasy over again, and they're going to talk about how they just hopped on a flight, and they're going to give you things. It's not going to be money, but it's going to be alcohol, because they want to see you having a good time. Unfortunately, there's a lot of drugs that are infiltrated as well, and so, you know, there's, like, cocaine being passed around, but that their purpose is to... Your purpose as a dancer is to accept these things. Even if you don't want them, you're going to accept them because there's always somebody else that wants them. And then you, again, have the people who come in that just are looking for, you know, the gym short guy. He's coming in. He's looking for the release. You have women who are coming in that are looking for attention, from beautiful women in the same way that men do. They're no different, except for they're a little bit more grabby and touchy because they feel like they can get away with things because they have the same parts, which is not true. Repeat, not true. And
are these women generally lesbian or just...
Both. You would have guys come in with prostitutes. You would have guys come in with their wives. And then you would have... You know, girls just sort of wander in, and then you would have girls and groups of girls that were lesbian, and, you know, they were just loud and, I don't know, particularly obnoxious. I feel like the lesbians that came into the strip clubs generally were obnoxious.
Something about maybe, like, reclaiming the space for themselves, because the perception is generally that it's a very, like, male space with women in a particular role, and they're like, they're going to come in there and they're going to subvert that paradigm, and they're going to come in and they're going to mix it up. So they're going to make a big splash about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. We also had a crossdresser come in, and he was coming in as a guy for quite some time. And then it actually called the bar to make sure that we would allow him to come in. Certainly. And he would come in during the day, you know, dressed as a woman. And that's the beautiful thing about the strip club is we accept everybody. We accepted everybody. It didn't matter who you were. You were going to get greeted with a smiley face, and you were going to get attention. And she, when she came in as a woman, just loved the fact that somebody would tell her how to do her hair or say, oh, sweetheart, you're looking beautiful today. And so that was another sort of element that we, again, this particular group of women that I worked with in this particular club, I have to praise, because it was sort of trickled down from the management that was working during the day.
So one of the things that I have definitely noticed about women who have worked as exotic dancers, higher than average amount of lesbians and bisexual women. Was that your perception?
At the time when I first started dancing, I classified myself as lesbian. And my partner was dancing, and she was lesbian. The bartender was lesbian. My best friend was actually married to the manager, who was a DJ during the day. And she, you know, was definitely, she was into women. It was sort of like the nature of it. Lots of women, once they got drunk, were into women in the back room or in the bathroom. It was a very lesbian-infused crowd, definitely.
What's that about?
I think just about, I mean, even if, it's kind of funny, just because my friend used to always tell me, he's like, you, any bar you walk into, it's automatically a lesbian bar. Automatically. He's like, you make it a lesbian bar. So we'd go in, have a couple of drinks. My best friend and I, we'd start making out. My partner and I would start making out. And then before you know it, everyone everywhere is making out. Women on women. Women are coming up to me. And it's just because of the, you get a couple of drinks and it becomes okay. And if they're the comment, if I'm going to kiss any girl, it's going to be you. Okay. It was a tough burden to bear all those years.
It's so horrible.
It was horrible.
Oh, having women want to make out with you is the worst. Oh, gross. Interesting. Okay, so I mean, I want to go back to, like, why do you think though that, and this wasn't, I think that this is not just exclusive to your club, obviously.
Yeah.
That a lot of women who choose to for a living dance in front of men are either also attracted to women or exclusively attracted to women.
You get turned off by men. You just, everything about their sexuality and their parts just becomes a separate classification. And I mean, that's just kind of sort of for men in general. You just sort of like, really? You know? And so I think women start turning to women because, it, you know, by nature, we're more compassionate, or we're more into the beauty. Or when my friend or another were dancing on stage, if anyone else in the club particular that day was looking at her as meat or object, I'd be sitting there thinking, wow, she is the most beautiful woman. And the way she moves is so demanding, and the lights hit her body, it's flawless. You know, that creates a lot of emotion in this art. We're like, oh, holy shit. And it's also an environment where sexuality is encouraged to be explored. So yeah, you sort of, men kind of get a little jaded, and you sort of look for somebody who's going to understand you. And the person who's going to understand you when your family's turned against you and your boyfriend's not happy with you, and you know, in some cases you're looked at as extremely dirty, is going to be the same women that are working with you.
It's interesting because this is all coming sort of back full circle to what you were originally saying about how what you got out of it, your appreciation for your job was out of creativity, sensuality, personal expression, etc. And that other people who came in or did not come in perceived the job as having nothing to do with that. And they might even think that you were in denial simply because they disagreed with you, because what they perceived exotic dance to be about mm-hmm. was different than what you perceived it to be about. Therefore, you must be wrong and whatever. So you find other people who share your worldview mm-hmm. and just like are going to cling to people who share that similar outlook.
And you spend a lot of time with these women naked, you know, and like dealing with the same ugliness, you know, like, oh, it's a community. It was a community. Like if you lost your concealer, oh, here, use mine. Oh, my curling iron's already plugged in. Or you look beautiful. You looked awesome today. You're naked, you're getting dressed in the back room, or, you know, you're talking about the fact that your ass unfortunately has a pimple on it from all the lap dances you've been doing, or you have a yeast infection because you're getting chafed from your thong. Like, these are conversations that people don't have with other people and general public or at, you know, the water cooler. So we're constantly staring at ourselves in the mirrors, and we're staring at ourselves in other people, in the light of other people. And it's extremely intimate.
It sounds like arguably the emotional intimacy is all there in those conversations. And then the physical intimacy is all with the customers, although the customers may be coming in for the emotional intimacy. Mm-hmm. But was it not reciprocal then? Like when they were seeking to unload on you?
There are several customers that it was definitely reciprocal, that, you know, we actually generated a friendship and we hung out outside of the club with no sexuality sort of underline. I mean, I tended to at the time exude sensuality. So it wasn't something that I could get away from, but it wasn't like we were meeting for the purpose of I'm, you know, a beautiful stripper and he's going to hang out with me. It was, we're friends first and foremost. Even though we have, this is our introduction, we've grown further from that.
Interesting. Before I forget, I want to go back to what you were just talking about, like you and the other women with whom you worked discussing physical beauty things. Mm-hmm. So when your job is your appearance, that's got to have a significant impact on you.
It does. You know, if you wake up with a pimple, you know, you don't feel sexy, and now you're being judged on that. Or, you know, particularly physically, there's something about our body. Just because I got naked for a living doesn't mean that I loved every part of my body. It doesn't, you know. So you get guys who would be like, well, do you want to stay in this, you know, job in this industry? You might want to think about getting a boob job, you know, like comments like these. Or people like something and they look at you. The worst part is when they look at you and they're like, and you say, would you like a dance? And they say no. Why did you say no? What is it about me that you're saying no about? Or, you know, you have your period and you're just like, oh, I don't want to do anything. I just want to curl up into a ball and cry, and I don't feel sexy. I don't like the way I look. I'm bloated. My hair's not right. And then you have to go in front of a group of people and you have to be an idol. You know, you have to be something that is on this pedestal of gorgeous, and you don't feel like it. And like, you know, at the time, because I was young and that was during a very highly developmental stage for me, because I was so boxed in, it was overwhelming. You know, my hair was long and it became more powerful than anything I could have ever imagined. If it wasn't right, I was having a bad day. My emotional, my self-worth started to become based on, you know, perfect hair and perfect eyebrows. And I didn't really like going out during the light. I didn't like going out during the daytime because, you know, if you could see a hair, I didn't quite shave just as nice. Or, you know, my nail polish was chipping off and I was giving up the mask. I was giving, you know, it's like Zorro going out during the day. It was just something you didn't want to do. I mean, for me personally. And unfortunately, you know, that just led to other things. Is now I have to get that confidence by purposefully becoming something stronger than I am. You know, I'm going to fake it till I make it. So I'm going to go out and I'm, you know, going to smoke pot. And now I'm going to get in this headspace that I am sexy. And I'm going to start drinking at noon to make myself feel sexier, to calm these nerves that on these tough days when I don't feel like I'm worth anything, you know, I have to build that up.
This makes me sad because I really like the initial way you came in with, you know, this was for you, this was a self-expression, this was all that. But then you still were buying into that you are a market item.
Mm-hmm.
You are a purchasable good and needed to be of a particular brand of beautiful.
It was more, I mean, that's exactly it. However, my relation to it is like when an artist goes into a canvas and it's not perfect, it doesn't go for sale. It's sort of torn up and thrown aside. It was like I had this idea of what the perfect picture was going to look like. And if I didn't think that that was the perfect picture, I didn't want to spend money on it, then why would somebody else want to?
Did it actually impact your professional success? Like if your nails were chipped, if your hair was out of sorts, do you think that people really cared?
No. My friends will tell you, oh, shut up, Beth. Your hair is always perfect. you know, it's sort of just, like I said, more of the developmental stage that I was in specifically of I was never beautiful as a child. I was never like daddy's princess or told, you know, I was sort of the girl while my friends were, you know, skinny wearing tank tops because of the way we were, you know, I was wearing sleeves with, you know, that covered my shoulders and shorts that were longer than my fingertips and they're in Daisy Dukes and they're getting all this attention. It didn't bother me. I didn't want to date. I wasn't interested, but I was the girl standing, you know, making jokes so it was less awkward for them at lunchtime or that little bit of time that they saw with their boyfriend before class. So now I was pushed into, you're beautiful. I'm like, what? Huh. I buy all my clothes from Goodwill and my socks don't match. And I like to tell jokes, not jokes that don't make sense. And so for me, it became, you know, like now I'm this and I didn't know how to relate to it. So when people are like, you're beautiful, I'm like, what? What does that mean? I don't get it. So I got into this headspace on bad days of, but you're not beautiful. You're not beautiful, Bethany. You never are, were, will be. And so my expression, just like anything else, when you're training for a marathon and, you know, you're having an off day and you're running, you're like, wow, my legs are all wobbling. I can't even get going. And then you realize, oh, you know, it's just because it's just an off day. You're just having an off day, or you didn't eat properly. You didn't treat your body with respect or something, or it's too early, or you're on your cycle. You know, it wasn't as detrimental. It was just sort of like a part of the job, just like anybody hates their job on different days. It just happened to affect me pretty hardcore.
It sounds like just a generally extreme form of the anxiety that a lot of women experience about their mm-hmm. own appearance and how so much of female worth is tied up in appearance. And you and I have discussed before about how in our society, most of the messages that are told to women and girls is that job one is to be pretty. And then once you've passed through that gate, then we will evaluate on the basis mm-hmm. of other variables and of intelligence and kindness and humor and athleticism or whatever it is that you bring to the table. But job one is to be pretty. And there's, I think, increasingly an expectation for young women that not only do you have to be able to succeed career-wise, but you still have the expectation that, you know, women are, at the core of it, still meant to be objects. So you have to be a badass, you have to be a successful badass, you have to be a smart badass, but be hot doing it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, some of the guys would come in, yeah, my wife used to do this, or she used to wear lingerie in bed, now she just jumps into pajamas. You know, like, there's still, but she's going to school, and she's getting a degree, and she's doing all these things, and she takes care of your kids, and she makes your meals. But what he's worried about is now she's not wearing any lingerie.
Are these guys wearing lingerie or an equivalent? I'd like to know about what, if they're still as rocking as they used to be.
Yeah, well, see, we don't, that's not our job to question. The man is always right. But it's interesting as well, on the flip side, is that in a strip club, you're not necessarily judged on beauty. You know, like, very often, not the most socially beautiful women is going away with the most money. It's a hustle. It's a game. And it's also the type of dance you're giving or what it is that they happen to be looking for. So there are plenty of, you know, for instance, if you say beautiful is women with a full set of teeth, there might be one or two missing from a face that's making the most money in the whole entire bar.
Interesting. I remember one time specifically, I was in Niagara Falls. I was told before I went to Canada the first time that Canadian strippers are, like, outrageously beautiful. And I didn't perceive them to be any different than those I'd seen anywhere else. But we watched several people go up there and work their asses off. They showed off crazy skills. They did whatever. And they made X amount of dollars. And then I remember this woman came out who looked like Barbie. Like, huge, enormous round boobs and, like, long, luxurious blonde hair. And she was very pretty in the most conventional way imaginable. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't stop the raining down of cash. Even she didn't even need to do anything. She appeared on stage and she was just killing it. And I remember being really sad by that because I was like, these other girls were working their asses off. I remember one girl, she looked like she was probably Indian in origin, very conventionally thin and pretty. She had braces and she was killing it on these crazy splits and mm-hmm. weird stuff on the pole. Did not make close to as much money. So, like, what you're saying to me now about the hustle was, like, very different from what I was viewing as just someone who was sitting there, not somebody who was familiar with the inner working. So would you argue then that probably in that situation, the blonde girl made a ton of money, like, on stage, but then, like, the other girls that were working probably made up for it some other way?
Definitely. A lot of the times, I mean, the thing with the club setting is that no one day is like the other. You get girls that are constantly rotating in. You get customers that are constantly rotating in. And again, is this a night shift?
Oh, yes, this definitely was.
The night shift is completely different. You get a younger group of people and people who are going out specifically to party who don't generally come to strip clubs on a regular basis. It's more of an event. It's an outing where some people go and watch a movie. They're going to go and watch live entertainment. A lot of the girls that hustle, unless you are close to where they're giving lap dances, they're probably staying in the lap dance section all night, making the most money, sitting there doing dances, you know, getting tipped high amounts of money. I mean, it's nice to get rained with dollars. It's an awesome feeling. It's great, but they're dollars. You know, and there's plenty of other notes that you can get one of them and you're going to put a bigger smile on my face.
Interesting. Are there definitely, is there, so every day is different as opposed to there being some sort of hierarchy of the ones who consistently make the most?
Yeah, there would be days where I would be the only person with making money. And then there's days where I would be the only person without any money. I'm like, what is going on? Yeah, I mean, it just depends. It varies. There's no explanation for it. You know, I could have one customer come in and just say, hey, here's a 50 or here's a 100. Merry Christmas. And I've now just tripled what everyone else has made if it's a really, you know, whatever kind of a day. But so, you know, you have the hustle, you got the pretty girls, and then you have the girls with personality that the guys want to sit and talk with or, you know, then the triple threat sort of a thing where guys come in, they are enamored by, oh my God, you are an amazing female. But then you have a guy who comes in, he's like, I like my tits to look like this, and I picked that girl. Just all the variables.
So thinking of those who get enamored, are there people who go overboard with it, like, to an extent that is obsessive?
I never really experienced myself obsessiveness. And you don't really have the chance for that to happen just because you, the nature of it is you spend time with this guy and then you go off to this guy, you know? So it's the fantasy of it. You allow them to think that you're right there with them, and they might come in constantly and, you know, say things to you like, oh, you're so amazing. You're the most awesomest lady I've ever met, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, thank you. And then you go on to the next person. So it never reaches a point where it's uncomfortable.
One thing that keeps coming back for me is this this idea of the people who come in to talk about their partners, their wives. And do you think that these guys are coming in because their relationship with their partner has changed? Do you think that they used to be able to be open and talk to these people? Or did they pick the wrong person? Do they just have... lack the communication skills to be honest with their wives about these things? Like the guy that was in Mexico and he couldn't tell his wife about it. Like, that's not, I don't know, but it didn't sound like he had done, you know, like cheating or anything like that, that Mm-mm. he specifically was keeping from her because it affected their relationship, but like he just wasn't being honest. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think about that?
You know, there's always the element of fantasy in the club. So for whatever purpose they want to tell me or whatever story they're telling me, you know, for this guy in particular, he was a pretty cool guy. You know, we called him Uncle, whatever his name was. Like, he was a solid, jovial dude. And I think that his wife just didn't recognize him for what he was, and he was more outgoing than she was, and he was more outgoing than she was, and it was this idea of, it would have seemed extremely irresponsible, and if he had traveled, she would have had to worry about him. With other guys, it's more of, like, we all need friends, and we all need people that we can talk to, and sometimes when people have jobs that don't allow them, you know, because I was working during the day, if they had night shifts, a lot of people are working 9 to 5, so they don't have an outlet, so they were using me as an outlet. But, you know, as far as, you know, the relationship between their wives, I don't know. It's hard to say because the club's kind of a fable and guys can come in and say whatever they want to. There's definitely one guy, and if his stories are all true, he, first of all, is a jackass. And second of all, he was always a partier and he knew he was always going to be, but he wanted to give his wife, like, it was sort of like the checklist. He was going to have a wife because that's what you do when you're a youth pastor. What you don't do is, you know, go to the bar and do coke and buy all the girls drinks. And he just didn't ever want to grow old, and he didn't want to give up this lifestyle. And he sort of was like the guy when he walked in, everyone's like, hey, you know, and he just wanted to be revered and wanted. And that sort of suited his, like, his sexuality, his need to be everything, whereas wife probably didn't see him as everything. You know, she probably saw him as a wonderful guy, a wonderful husband, but, you know, wasn't near as adventurous. And I don't say adventurous, because it's just like, what are you willing to give me? And I don't think you should fawn over your partner and say, oh my God, you're so great, I'm so in love with you. Ah, like the pedestal type. I think personally that's unhealthy, but that's what he wanted. So that's why he was going to the club to get that.
He wanted to be on the pedestal.
Yes.
Okay. So the whole thing is fantasy for everybody involved.
Pretty much. I mean, there does come reality. Like, the girls and I, you know, we talk in the back. There is this real sense. Again, there's real conversation that does happen with people. But a lot of, I mean, we sell an idea. We sell this idea.
Hello, lovely Sex with Simmery listeners. Today, in lieu of a homework assignment, we're going to give you an extra special treat. It's a segment from our guest contributor, Bethany. She's going to list for you some ideas about etiquette in strip clubs and around exotic dancers. Thank you for joining us, Bethany. Go ahead.
Awesome. Here it is. Dollar bill is not your finger. So when you rub it up and down the legs and around the butt cheeks and try to stick it in my thong, it is still a dollar bill. It is not your finger. It's scratchy. It's dirty. Don't do it. 2, don't ever, under any circumstances, yell, "Stick it in her ass." That doesn't create the element of sexy. Don't tell jokes thinking you're unique. Unique has already been done. Always give a dollar. We call it drive-bys. You can sit in any bar. This is my place of business. So as an entertainer, you are going to pay for that entertainment. And if you are especially sitting by the stage or the catwalk, even if I am not your type or she is not your type, you need to go ahead and give it up. It's a dollar bill. It's a dollar. Don't wear gym shorts. That is a pretty good rule. Next, you're going to be considered creepy if you sit in the creepy corner. Why creepy people sit in creepy corners? Also, don't brag about how much money you have if you aren't actually spending it. Brags don't pay bills. If you have a pile of money sitting by your beer and don't give a single, everyone knows you have a small penis. Don't be a douchebag. If you have to be an adult to get into a club, you should possibly try to act like one. And lastly, see the beauty and enjoy the beauty of the woman, of the arts, of the life.
I believe there was one more about ass slapping that needs to be reminded of people.
Which one?
There was something about ass slapping.
Oh, ass slapping. Oh, yeah. Don't ever, 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 under any circumstances, ever go up and think it's okay for you to slap somebody's ass, male or female. It is highly inappropriate. It is wrong. It is abusive. You should never do it unless you ask and get permission first.
Beautiful. Thank you, Bethany, for your list of etiquette ideas for people in strip clubs and around exotic dancers.
Recognize.
Hey, cats and kittens who listen to Sex with Simmery. We want to reward you for all your loyal listening and reading. And so if you like us on Facebook, Sex with Simmery at Facebook, so it's facebook.com/sexwithsimmery, you are automatically entered in to win free porn. The lovely Brian Bangs at popporn.com has donated generously some very fine films, and we'll be giving away one per week, and we will be picking at random based on whether you are a fan of Sex with Simmery on Facebook and also if you've interacted with the wall. So go right now to Facebook, like Sex with Simmery, and feel free to interact on the wall by answering polls or responding to posts or just writing something on the wall to say hi. We'd love to hear from you. Again, free porn! Thanks! Thank you for listening to Sex with Simmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmare@gmail.com. And thank you.